Okay. Well, I don't know about you, but I always invariably start all recordings with okay. I suppose people have their habits. This is Matt Stevens in Abu Dhabi, and we're just starting the second session today, and I guess our first ever double header for Learning Together. This is November 4th, 2012. And I'm Vance in Abu Dhabi, and we have with us the pretty much most of the organizing team, at least a quorum, for the K-12 online conference. And I'm a great fan of the K-12 online conference. I've been following it since 2006, and we even did a little warm-up session last week on it. So I'd like to welcome Peggy George from Phoenix, and Susan Van Gelder in Montreal, and Wesley Fryer from Oklahoma, but at the moment in Manhattan, Kansas. So why don't you guys say hi?
Hi from Montreal. It's Susan here. Hello from Phoenix, Arizona, and this is Peggy George. Great to be here with you.
And hello from Manhattan, Kansas. This is Wes Fryer with a hoarse voice, and we want to thank Vance and the Webheads for taking this opportunity to share the K-12 online conference and amplify the great work of our presenters, because a tremendous amount of learning for our conference definitely happens after the conference as well as during the conference.
Yeah, that's the way it's always been for me. We're sort of, we're trying to connect communities and working on that. I sort of have a vision of a pan community that transcends. I guess it start. Our first conference, we had something called the Webheads in Action Online Convergence in 2005. I've always wondered if you were aware of that when you did your conference, which seemed to really spontaneously arise. It was right about the time that conferences were. I know prior to our conference, there were a lot of pay-as-you-go, pay-to-view conferences. You had to put down a credit card. They weren't really open. So it was the time that was just right for open Web 2. You guys were doing that thing in Shanghai, the Web 2.0 conference, Web 2.0 learning. Maybe you can tell us more about how you guys got started.
Well, I didn't learn about Webheads really until I think Cheryl Oakes was involved, because I had been following their group, the Seedlings. So my understanding of how this all came about was Will Richardson and Cheryl Nussbaum Beach and Darren Kerpotwa talking about, hey, we could have a conference online. We've got this capability now with blogs. And Dean Sharesky got pulled in at some point, and then at some point I did. So I'm not for sure. We'd have to kind of go back and ask some of those people. But I didn't become aware of the Webheads community until later in the game. But I also wasn't like the first person to think of K-12. I got pulled in on the first year for the organizer team, but it wasn't I wasn't there at the beginning, so to speak, when the first conversations happened.
You did give a keynote presentation at one of our Webheads in Action online convergences. We certainly appreciated that. And I guess there's part of a community straddle. And that was back in 2009, I think. We had them in 2005, 2007, 2009. And what Learning Together is kind of a reaction on my part to the severe annoyance of putting on a 72-hour, 3-day, sleepless, all online, nonstop event. That was just painful. And of course, you've solved the problem by going asynchronous. Well, I don't know how you solved it. We'll talk about that, but I'm sure it's a lot of trouble, a lot more trouble than people appreciate, possibly. But anyway, that Learning Together gets you about the same bang for the buck, one or two sessions a week, and you've got 52 of them throughout the year, and it's a lot easier. So I think I had a question in there, didn't I? Over to you. If I didn't ask a question, I'll ask one.
Actually, I was thinking there are two very different models, and I think each serves different purposes. What our conference is able to do is live on throughout the year and provide professional development that we may not even know about. So we do know that there are some university people who are using these sessions with their pre-service teachers, and we know that there are teachers who get together and watch some of these sessions. So it becomes asynchronous in terms of what we're delivering, and for the people who watch together, it becomes synchronous, but they don't have the chance to interact with the presenter. And I think your model provides a different idea of professional development, but it also allows for the discussions between the people who are there present at the time.
Yeah, it's good to have many models, many modalities. Wesley's saying in the chat, he could grab the mic. I think they're all available. We've got four mics open. So he's just saying that, that's very important. Go ahead.
Sure, and I was just commenting that I think we're more asynchronous this year than ever. There are some live events, but in the past we've worked to have really a live event per week with keynoters, and, you know, we midway through the conference, because I think this is our seventh year. You know, we've had times to try to bring together all different presenters in a strand and have people talking, and it's really a challenge because of schedules and the fact that there's so much quantity of content. There's good things. I mean, hey, by the way, let's celebrate time zones, because, you know, we're here and there was a time change last night, so yay. But that, you know, there's all kinds of learning that goes around that. So I've always enjoyed the immediacy that comes with some live events, but we see so many different live events, I guess, this year, and Peggy and Susan can kind of chime in on their thoughts. I've seen K-12 kind of, define the core of the conference as really asynchronous learning. But like Susan said, you know, we're only aware of some of how people are using the content. And, you know, I think you with Webheads, Vance, from the little that I do know, do such a great job building live community and synchronous community, you know, many times around asynchronous pieces. But that whole dance that happens, I guess, between the opportunities we have to use both live and asynchronous is really, it's great to be learning about the possibilities, and I think we, like many others, are searching to find what can be most effective and what are the contexts, I guess, that make things effective, because they both have their places and times.
One of the things we found this year is, and over the years we've tried different methods of trying to get conversations going around some of the sessions, and it's something we keep looking at. This year, Karen Fassenpaar set up a P2PU around the different sessions. It's hard to get people giving the feedback and getting conversations going around things the way you would in a live session, but we don't know about all the ripples that are happening face-to-face.
I called, the LAN, Peggy just mentioned the LAN parties, yes, the PLN parties. I just went to a conference in Istanbul called the A Planet Conference, something that Graham Stanley, in our community, he's one of the stragglers of all these communities, but they started something called A Planet, which is sort of a teacher professional development initiative, and then they had a conference about it. But I like that PLN theme, the PLN parties, and that's something I think, was it George Utech who started the idea of the PLN parties? Would you know that for sure? Jeff Utech, yes, Jeff.
Well, and something that I'm working with UConn schools this year and have been inspired to do is most, and I can say this definitively, most of our teachers, and we're just west of Oklahoma City metro area, they haven't really experienced either live webinar learning or asynchronous learning. We just had all of our librarians participate in the School Library Journal webinar that they did, I think, 2 weeks ago. But I'm going to start offering sessions with K-12 along the LAN party line, where we'll watch it together, talk about it together, and then also talk about comments and get people to comment. Because one of the things that we see with K-12 is that comments on sessions and on the blog tend to be really few and far between. And sometimes those are coming now from more pre-service teachers than in-service teachers who've, I guess, you know, been involved with the use of tools in the classroom, et cetera. And since they're so rare, you pay so much attention to them. The whole dynamic around comments with conference content is something that I'd like to intentionally help teachers in different contexts, you know, work on, because gosh, it means so much to a presenter who spent hours and hours, you know, getting their materials together. And so, you know, I'd love to hear some of your ideas about how we could do that, because I think building the capacity to edify each other and support each other through comments, the ability to have asynchronous connections that can then lead to synchronous, you know, even if they're at a distance, connections, all of those are really important pieces of digital literacy and collaboration. And definitely K-12, we've had all kinds of folks connect via the conference, and I think we'll continue to. But anyway, the commenting piece, I'd love that to get to grow, because I personally work with a lot of teachers. That's like saying, do you speak, you know, Farsi or Mandarin or some other language that they've never studied before. They haven't been in that culture and that environment of online, live, and asynchronous learning.
I'd love to jump in here and just add a little bit about the LAN parties, because that was such a tremendous success for us here in Phoenix. It was when Jeff UTEC first suggested it that we jumped right on that and scheduled our first LAN party. And it was the year that Kim Cofino was keynoting the conference, and Jennifer Wagner did a presentation on global projects and global collaboration. And so we had our group together, we watched those two presentations together, and then we actually arranged a Skype call with both Kim and Jennifer, and it was like afternoon for Jennifer and it was the next morning for Kim, and it was so fantastic to be able to talk directly to them, not only about their presentations, but about our questions about how you get things like that going with your classrooms. It was a tremendous experience, and the one thing we have found so much is the generosity of educators, and it's just amazing to me that there are so many people who are willing to devote their time and their expertise to completely volunteering to present at these conferences, and their willingness then to follow up with something like a Skype conversation with a small group of people all the way in Arizona was just very touching and very powerful. So I encourage you to think about that as an experience if you haven't tried it. But even if you don't organize a LAN party, there are just so many ways you can share the links to these recordings and encourage people to take a look at something that you found valuable and tell them why. You know, it's great to get a link, but if you know that someone you respect shares that recording with you and says they had some really great suggestions for ways you can integrate technology into art, for example, then you really want to go check it out. So I encourage you to do that. I'd just like to add to what Peggy said. We tried 1 year, or maybe even two, I don't remember now, to do an ECHO program. So once a month we would highlight one of the sessions from K-12. We would stream it and have the presenter there if possible, and then actually not if possible, have the presenter there, and then people had an opportunity to discuss and have questions around it. It wasn't as successful as we had hoped, so we're always looking for new ways for us to make the conference a little more or a little less asynchronous, a little more synchronous, in terms of these presentations are amazing what people do, the hours that they put in creating them, and we need to make sure that they get out to as many people as possible. And in terms of their relevancy, I go back sometimes to some made 4, 5, 6 years ago, and they're just as relevant because there's so many teachers still at a starting out level who need to hear some of those messages from them and from Ben. So any ideas that people have that can encourage discussion around it, that can help us think of ways to make the conference relevant to as many people as possible or get it out to as many people as possible, we're looking for ideas as much as you are.
It's such a changing playing field. And that's one thing it would be nice to touch on. Because one of the changes, I think, is that, when we started this back in 2005, 2006, in the first conferences, when there was an online event, people would flock to it. People have, in a way, flocked to this one. We've got Ed Marr from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, who's joined us, and John Hibbs, and Nadia Obrad-Silva from Bellevue, Washington. And I find myself personally, Peggy knows that I listen to the K-12 online recordings. I don't watch them because if I find an interesting one, like on Minecraft or something like that, of course I'll try and go and watch it. But I'm a listener. I listen to most of Wesley's podcasts. I think I have actually. I don't really know. I didn't do an inventory. But Peggy says I work an hour and a half from where I'm living, and so I got 3 hours of listening in today, and I did some jogging over the weekend. So, the thing is that what I'm saying is that people don't find it such a novelty to go online and meet synchronously. Listening to the recording is just fine. So, probably we had a lot of people who just joined us for the last 3 hours, so they're probably a little bit tired. I know in South America they were going out to lunch. So, and when they do that, that's what they do. So, but of course the choice is, let's hear it synchronously. So I think synchronous is very appropriate, But I'd like to ask you, maybe get you on the topic of how are you responding to changes? You've just mentioned you're looking for ways, to try to get these out, and of course this nature of social networking is constantly changing. But what are some other ways you've been changing what you've been doing for the last few years?
One thing, I'm going to pass this maybe to Peggy to talk a little about iTunes U. Without Blip, forget it. And if people don't know about Blip TV, we did have this past week on Wednesday when our conferences went live, because we think, that's what it sounded like from their Twitter feed, because of Hurricane Sandy, there was an interruption for most of the day on Wednesday with Blip. But Blip has been amazing. Now, it costs, I think, about $7 a month for a pro account, but what you're able to do is basically throw videos at it, or upload them, and it transcodes them into an embeddable Flash format, but also into an iOS-friendly downloadable M4V format and an MP3 audio-only format. And so in the different years of the conference, we've really put our made our organizers at some point become contortionists and one with file formats and file transfers, and we've also, you know, one year made our presenters do that, where we, I'll exaggerate a little bit, but where we basically gave them about 500 steps with 10 different tools and said, here, thanks for making your presentation. Now we'd like you to, you know, spend several hours doing all these things to get your file ready for the conference. So anyway, without Blip, that it would not be happening the way that it has the last couple years. And maybe Peggy can talk a little bit about iTunes U. I mean, we definitely have, and you can see this in our mission statement, a focus on accessibility and not wanting to just tell people, hey, you can only have, you know, this device or whatever. I mean, we want things to be accessible. But that being said, iTunes U has presented an opportunity for a unique kind of delivery. So Peggy, do you want to share a little bit about that and kind of where we've come with that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I am thrilled that we have this opportunity to be able to upload to iTunes U. It's a little bit different than just uploading to a regular iTunes channel, but anyone can subscribe to it if they have a mobile device that will allow them to access iTunes. And you can download the presentations onto your mobile device or your computer, either one. But you don't have to download them to listen to them. You can just click on play and you can listen to it, and so it's not taking up any memory on your mobile device. But we are using a channel from Arizona State University, which is called the IDEAL channel, that's the name of it, and they have given us permission to post all of our recordings. So for the last 2 years, we've been posting there, and our goal is to get all of the previous years uploaded to that same channel, so they're all in one place. Right now, if you were to search iTunes for K-12 Online, you would find some presentations in different locations. Some of them on iTunes and some on iTunes U. So that's our goal, to get them all in one place. But being able to have the presenters share the link to their recording and create a blog post for it that describes it, they upload that, we upload that to Blip TV, and then I can get the recording links from that and upload them to iTunes U. So my job every day, which I truly look forward to, because I love being able to distribute the content on iTunes U, I get up at 4:30 a.m. my time and get those all uploaded by the time the links go live. And for people that aren't familiar with the conference, you need to know that it's a 2-week-long conference, but the presentations are uploaded approximately 4 every day for each week in the conference. So they're kind of spread out, gives you a chance to kind of check them out at a slower pace. But then once they're uploaded, they're always there. So if you can't check them out the day that they're uploaded, you can go back and check them out on at any time, because that is one of the true advantages of being an asynchronous conference, which is that you can view or listen to them anytime, any place you have access to the internet. So that's just a little bit about iTunes U, and I encourage you to click on that link on our website. I'll bring that site up in just a moment so you can see where it is and subscribe to them, and then you can listen to them whenever it's possible for you.
I'd just like to mention there's a talk about metrics. What the metrics will never measure is all the people who download from iTunes U rather than just watch on iTunes U. I mean, I have shared countless sessions with my colleagues at workshops that I've given, and those metrics will never show up because I'm showing them from my computer. And I'm sure there are many others doing the same thing.
Yeah, there's a back channel conversation going on here about metrics. So John, would you like to grab a mic and ask Wesley the questions? Well, while John's getting set up, I have another. Go ahead, John.
Well, I didn't have my headset on. I was enjoying listening through my speakers, which are much better than my headset. But I just think it would be interesting to see how many people over time, including the archives, including the listening, view, and for how long.
And John, we've, in the past, I don't think we've done this in the last few years, we've tried to guesstimate that, but Susan is really right about how elusive I think those numbers are. We certainly can publish, you know, what we have and what we know. I think there are perhaps some metrics that somebody on the Arizona iTunes U channel could get. When we look at page views and things like that, it's interesting because, and I don't know this, I'm not an expert, but I perceive that, you know, there's a lot of spam bots and other, you know, things accessing pages. And so, you know, at some point we looked at our cluster map and thought, oh, look, we've got 20,000 participants. And I don't know that was the number, but it was, you know, there were thousands and thousands of dots on our cluster map. If you're not familiar with cluster maps, it's a nice little embeddable map you can put that shows, you know, the location. I bet the webheads are all, you guys probably actually have better tools to recommend us than cluster maps. But even Google Analytics will show you, you know, where people are grabbing your page and they'll guesstimate how long they've stayed. But that's where I'd like to really have more focus on the comments, because when you get a comment on a presentation, you know, with a link back to somebody's blog or their Twitter page or something, that puts a different face, I guess, on the participation and the impact in the community. So one thing we've talked about, and I think we're going to encourage, is some professional development sharing throughout the year about ways in which teachers and schools are using the content and really try to amplify that, because we've had, you know, some different schools in different places and teachers and professors, you know, use them. But we certainly can, you know, share the metrics we have at this point. But I agree with Susan that, you know, the metrics are giving a partial story. They're not giving a complete one. Yeah, there's the cluster map that has been brought up there in the web tour. So, you know, lots of dots in lots of different places. And by the way, if somebody can tell me who's in Pitcairn Island, if you look out there in the Pacific, you know, south of the equator, southwest of Hawaii, I think that dot is Pitcairn Island. So, you know, I don't know if we have an educator there or, you know, these maps have definitely triggered some conversations in the past, and it's exciting to see. But, you know, the stories in the comments are where we really find out what people are doing and how the content's having an impact.
Have you found any successful methods of aggregating your content? Just, you know, as an example, some of these MOOCs that Stephen Downs and Dave Cormier and George Stevens are putting on. Stephen has created a little script called Grasshopper, and it requires that in order to register, to get aggregated, you know, he puts out a newsletter every day that aggregates all the content, that all the conversations around what goes on at their MOOCs. But in order for it to pick it up, you've got to register with the site. I think actually, Wes, I don't know if you remember, you made a really nice comment on something that we put out at a time when you had to make all those different media files. I think I was there in that year, but we, my colleagues and I, did something on writing matrix, and it was something we did with students, which was used Technorati, which was working at the time, to aggregate content really well. And Stephen, when I've talked to him about this, he points out to me that if you tried that now, you'd probably get spammed, you know. So that's why he makes people register. So I'm just wondering if you found any, you know, ways to figure out what people are saying about the conference, you know, like a Twitter tag, but what's particularly effective?
Pardon me. Well, I don't know about the Grasshopper and what's going on with those MOOCs. So that would be good stuff to check out. I mean, we've used a Twitter hashtag, and you know, there's some window of insight into some discussions that's happening there. We've wrestled around the question about capturing emails and the whole issue of control and to what degree do you want to try to control content, for instance, so that you can know metrics and have numbers, you know, that you point to, is something that we've gone back and forth with. We had a Ning for the conference for a variety of years. We've actually had a lot of, I personally have some difficulty trying to get them to delete that, and that we decided a couple years ago to move away from that. But we've never set it up where, you know, you have to register and we have to capture your email. So we've got a mailing list now from basically the Ning and letting that grow. But I don't know. I mean, I definitely think that we can do more to leverage and market and let people know about the quality of the content, because just like Susan or Peggy had mentioned, you know, there are phenomenal presentations in K-12, but they're kind of buried perhaps, and if you don't know to find them. And so maybe, you know, we mentioned Karen Fassenpar and the Peer-to-Peer University, there really might be a good opportunity to collab, you know, to co-create a course that might sort of glean some of the high points, or and then maybe that's not even the right word, but just some thematically connected sessions that would be able to provide, you know, more of a course experience for people. I don't know. I'm rambling, but somebody just put the tweet chat up. Is that may be Peggy? Does somebody want to talk a little bit about some of this as well? Because I don't think we have any answers, but we definitely have the desire to further amplify great content that we have, and so that's why opportunities like this are great to get together and hear about other things and then get, you know, suggestions.
There are just so many ways to find this information and I don't even know for sure if you can bring meaning to it just by aggregating it. Wes, I put a question in the chat, and I don't know if you responded to it, but I was wondering if this, then that would be a possible way to bring all of that together in one place. But I still think we have to make meaning out of that. People are participating in so many different ways, and they share their stories in their blog posts, in their tweets, on Facebook, in many different ways, and I don't think it's so much the numbers that participate that's the important metric there, but it's the experience and what it's bringing to them. So the fact that we can listen to a presentation in any of these online conferences, whether it's coming from Africa or Alaska or the U.S. or wherever, and can then engage in a conversation about it, and that it helps us to think differently about the way we do things, those are the opportunities we provide. And we, meaning any of us, are doing these online things, including this experience today with fans. And we're always looking for those opportunities, especially when they're free, because anymore, we can't really afford to purchase those things. But we can take the time, whether it's a live event or a recorded event, to expand our thinking and then to reach out to other people to either discuss it or to share it or to use it in some way to create new examples of classroom teaching and then share that out. So this tweet chat is just one way of following all of the tweets that have been coming through using the hashtag K12Online12. But I think that there are many other ways to follow that. I know I use TweetDeck to follow personally because I can keep that open with multiple columns and follow multiple hashtags, but this is a very simple way to follow it, and it's also a very simple way to participate in the conversation. Sometimes they get lost in the traffic on Twitter, and if you go to Tweet Chat, you're actually right actively in that conversation and can retweet or add your comments right there in that thread. So that's just a few of my thoughts about that.
Yeah, just by way of introduction, John did something, probably last century. It was called Global Learn Day, and he's sort of patched together. I think he was doing that right at the beginning of Real Player, and he was before that he was patching his conference, a global conference that went around the world for 24 hours and brought educators together for free. That was last century. So John is kind of an innovator there. I'd also like to welcome Angeliki from Greece and Morteza from Iran, who's joined us. So both welcome. I'd like to ask kind of another provocative question. When I listened to the, I should say back in 2006, you know, the time when we were flocking to these online presentations because they were novelty, I felt personally that they were just so cutting edge. I mean, well, for example, cutting edge to me was having Jeff Utrecht talk me through Twitter, what do you do with Twitter? And that's how I actually got Twitter. I'd say for the present one, I think a really cutting edge talk was by a high school girl who said that Mr. Marcos sent her a video that explained a math concept, and her classmates were so taken by the idea that they started making the videos themselves. So here's an educator modeling for students who are then transforming their learning. But I'm finding it kind of hard. I don't know, maybe it's me, what do you think? Are you finding the cutting edge definitely has shifted? But of course, it's very important. You know, when you just come into the entry point, it's very important that you become wowed by all the new tools. So I just wonder if the cutting edge shifted or have we shifted? What do you think?
I think it's a combination. Those who've been around for quite a while keep cutting their teeth on all the new tools and everything that's happening. So it's a lot harder to wow people because after you've learned a few tools, you can easily find other things, and you've built up your PLN, so you're getting recommendations all year. It's not quite as astounding to people who've been in it for a long time. To me, cutting edge now is more about really finding ways to change education. It's not about the tools. So in the conference, we try to meet all ends, so we always have a getting started strand. But I think our cutting edge this year, for instance, one of the cutting edge strands was visioning new curriculum and looking at ways of for education. Yes, we address technology, but the most important thing is education and the students.
I'd add to that that it's always a challenge to address needs at any conference event or any kind of learning, you know, of folks who are on a broad spectrum. And there really is a digital divide. I put into the back channel that, in my perception, the majority of teachers today in the classroom have still not experienced what was cutting edge in 2006. So there's a huge gap between educators who are connected and who have been learning together online for, you know, 5+ years. And then folks who are completely new to the conversation. So Susan's right that I think that the visioning new curriculum piece is an important part of the cutting edge. And something we've done with the conference each year is to always try and innovate and try something different. And usually that's with a different strand. So we've had 4 strands, and this year the visioning new curriculum is our different strand. We haven't had a student voices every year, but that's definitely been just one of my personal favorite ones. It's also one of the hardest ones to get presenters for. And, you know, I think that's another benefit of the conference is it creates immediacy for this content to be created and shared. Anyway, I think that the whole idea of trying to address folks who are in the getting started strand and who are the beginners, but then also provide provocative, challenging, worthwhile, cutting edge, you know, ideas and suggestions for teachers who have been connected for years and part of this conversation. That's an enduring challenge for the conference. So it's a great thing, but it definitely is is challenging because we're not setting out to just sort of provide content and learning for advanced users. You know, I think we've always had a heart for inviting everyone to the table and not talking with so much expertise and jargon and you know, whatever the vocabulary is, that people are intimidated to come in. Anyway, anybody else want to speak to that sort of balancing act between those audiences?
Yeah, Wes, you're always moving at the speed of creativity and always bringing that message home to so many people, you know, as it comes out in your presentations when you record them. So you're a very good example of that. You mentioned earlier in the conversation Will Richardson and then this new strand, Reinvisaging the Curriculum, and Will's just written a sort of a short little book, very readable, in which he says that, it's called Why School. I think that's an interesting concept. I mean, if you take that at face value, it's not really saying that we shouldn't have schools. He's saying that there are two ways to change it. Either you take the corporate approach and you try to make it better, or you re-envisage it, you know. And still, though, there is quite a lot of, how would you say, some sort of, it's got legs, this idea of, you know, well, people are homeschooling their kids because, you know, trying to get them into a better education. Maybe, what do you see about, you know, about that kind of thing when you go and meet educators in Oklahoma and Texas, Kansas? You said that, the people who interact with you in your presentation seem pretty sharp, you know. I mean, I'm sure you meet all kinds. But how do you think that's been changing, you know, over the years, over the recent year or two, I should say?
Well, I don't know. It's going to be hard not to be really pessimistic. But we're so test driven, you know. In Oklahoma, we're A through F report card driven now, thanks to Jeb Bush and the Digital Learning Now and stuff. It really is rare, in my experience, to find school administrators that have a vision for learning and for reimagining school beyond what the legislature and the State Department of Ed and the hierarchy is telling them to focus on. So it definitely happens, and I hope locally we're gonna do an Ed Camp in February, in several months. It's just the pockets, you know. So connecting the pockets is an important piece of that. And when I go to conferences, and there's a session on iPads or a session on, audio narrated art or whatever we're going to call, you know, different ways of adding our voice and sharing media, et cetera. There definitely are a lot of folks who are connected and doing that. They come together at those events. But when you just go to, let's say, a mandatory professional development that a school is requiring, it's absolutely shocking how little digital literacy there is on the part of teachers. Just Friday, I was helping lead a Story Chaser workshop, and, you know, over half the teachers were not familiar with creating a folder on their desktop and putting media into it and, you know, just basic file navigation, file organization kinds of things. So, people need to do research on this, and I'm sure there are some people doing it. There's a huge digital divide today, and it's not just with students and, you know, with teachers. I would expect, Vans, with the Webheads in Action and international teachers, there's a lot more focus and encouragement on the international connections because you are, it seems to me, much more internationally and outwardly focused perhaps than maybe many of our schools and teachers might be in the States. But I don't think that has substantially changed as far as the schools I work with in the United States having a big focus and emphasis on digital literacy, collaboration, and learning. And, John Hibbs has put in here some definite great ideas about trying to reach out with mainstream media to connect with larger audiences. And maybe that is something we need to invite people to help with a committee with K-12 and become passionate about, because a lot of what we do is hidden, and the teachers who are involved in it aren't at the forefront. They're not; it's not headlines in the newspaper or on the television. And so, it's just much more limited, I think, in impact. But that's sort of a stateside, Midwestern, more focus. And I don't know what do some of you all think about John's or about Vance's question.
I feel a bit pessimistic too. We had the greatest curriculum here in Quebec, which was very child-centered, and it's moving backwards. And also there's a huge paranoia here about the Patriot Act in the U.S. and the effect it would have on our students if they post anything that could be viewed as controversial. And therefore there's a movement to close down a lot of the Web 2 possibilities and not let students use servers that live in the U.S. So there's a long, long way to go. And unfortunately, in many cases, we're moving backwards, not forwards.
Positive side, though, I'm definitely encouraged, Vance, with what you shared about, you know, your commutes. And I know for me, discovering audiobooks and Audible, as well as other podcasts, you know, my learning and use of those tools has changed and grown as I've had different commutes and different times where I've had, you know, hours to be in the car or to, you know, have that space to fill with professional learning. So I guess I would put out an invitation to anyone who would be interested in helping contribute, if you're listening live or if you hear this later. Our group has never been large for K-12. It's always been small. However, the quality, depth, and breadth of presentations represented by the presenters is absolutely mind-blowing and astounding. And so we have great opportunities to further amplify and utilize these tools. And it's exciting to see the Peer-to-Peer University Initiative, which is new this year. And we want to continue this conversation because, you know, we're passionate about not only improving our own teaching and professional growth, but, you know, connecting educators to inspire each other, because every time educators get together and swap ideas about some of the best things they've, you know, seen or done, somebody always gets inspired and somebody takes an idea and tries something and, you know, does something different. So, you know, this is always an all-volunteer effort, and it's not something that anybody's doing full-time. And I've told this to our convener team. I'm always really happy, you know, at the end of the conference, you know, to kind of take a break for a while. But it would be wonderful for a committee, I guess, to continue work, especially on amplifying ideas of what other people are doing with conference content and continuing to iterate, play, and try some other things that would help encourage the conversations and broaden the audience, because it's just, it would be a crime, right, for us to hide and not share the wonderful ideas that are in the conference presentations. And we definitely have some real timely ideas in this year. So one thing, too, of course, that people can do, and we'll have our call for proposals out in the spring, is to submit an idea. Maybe this year we could also put out, you know, suggest a speaker, you know, or suggesting a concept or an idea that you'd like to see addressed. Because the conference will go on and the opportunity to contribute will go on, but it's always been a small group, and we'd love to have additional contributions from folks that have ideas and would like to put in, you know, some time in helping amplify the conference and share it with more people.
And just to get back to the question for a moment on change in education, I don't know if any of you read the article that was in the New York Times about technology shortening students' attention spans. I found it fairly narrowly focused, and interviews were with teachers who probably were more part of the digital divide that weren't comfortable with technology. But what's more important are some of the responses that I've read to that, and about people who talk about what technology has brought to their classes in terms of global education, in terms of being aware of audience. And I think constant getting those voices out is really important, and important, one of the important things that our conference does.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about the point you made about the fantastic presentations. I've learned so much, you know, from listening to them. I mean, I was introduced to Prezi, Chris Betcher's digital storytelling, Bondi Beach, seeing sculptures, putting them into a digital story. You know, these, as I said, you know, this was cutting edge to me at the time. It's nice. You know, you do have to have these things repeated over and over again. And as you say, this is really great to have. it's really great to have to be repeating. You know, you really need to repeat in order to get the message out, and people can't forget that. So let's see. Any thoughts on the future of K-12? One thing we do, you know, just talking about getting the message out, and one reason I'm so interested in connecting with you guys, especially since you do such great work, but is that we do connect, you know, through our podcasts, and let's say through the work of Paul Allison, who podcasts, and so many people, the Seedlings people, and the people who podcast on the World Bridges Network. I think that's a good, and of course Dave Cormier is in that, and working with Jeff LeBeau, who does some really fantastic work with Hangouts. He's always on the talk about the cutting edge. He's always fascinating me. You know, he's able now to embed a Titan Pad kind of chat into the stream that comes out when you stream your Hangout, so that you get basically a back channel chat room that streams with your stream, and it's all recorded. It's pretty interesting. I don't know if you've ever seen some of those, but Paul Allison is using that stuff now. So, you know, all this sharing that's going on is, you know, certainly having an effect, and we're all learning from one another. And I don't want to impose on your time. You better let me know if you don't want to go on for another 10 minutes. But I've got a lot more to say. But allude to the future of K-12. Do you want to just address that issue? Are you going to keep doing this forever and ever, year after year?
Well, I don't think we haven't ever had a motion in an organizer meeting that it's the year to end. So my expectation is for it to continue, but I think, and this is something for all the organizers here to chime in with, it's something that's hopefully going to continue to evolve and find ways to be relevant. This, in my view, as an organizer, a strand convener, this year was the best ever. I mean, you know, after 7 years or whatever of doing that, I mean, we really, what does best ever mean? I guess what I'm thinking is, in terms of the stress and the hours and the time, things have been streamlined pretty well, I think, in terms of a process. But there's a lot of work to be done on the marketing side and the conversation side and the imagining side, if that makes sense, of ways in which the content for the conference, both current and past, can be made relevant and useful to a wider range of teachers. So I'd love to see that work, you know, continue. We do have conveners who will step down and organizers who will step down, and you know, the amount of work and time that you know, Peggy and Susan and Jose and Ginger and Kim, you know, have put into this is, you know, really amazing and phenomenal. So big shout outs to them, and then to all the presenters who put in all that time as well. Because if we were to do that, and I think we are going to do a post-survey this year of our presenters, I bet it would probably surprise surprise and maybe even shock some people, you know, how much time and preparation has gone into those presentations. So it is part of the ways that we can thank these volunteer presenters is not only through some comments that give them some good feedback on their presentations, but you know, also by sharing their work and letting a wider audience have an opportunity to benefit from it, because that's why the volunteers are doing their work, is to share their ideas and hope that it's going to inspire some other folks. So I'll pass it to Peggy. Peggy, what's the future of K-12 online?
Well, you just said it all. I just think the conference is so terrific, and I truly value the alternative it provides in virtual conferences, because great thought and preparation goes into those videos, and it's a different experience than even this kind of live webinar that is fairly spontaneous takes you in different directions as well. I think that I want to see K-12 Online continue. Wes, can you turn off your mic? Thank you. We're getting some echo there. Continue to reach out to the people who would like to share their learning or their experiences through this conference. I know that we can always make improvements, but I hope that we keep the concept. I love the student voices strand, and I hope that we keep that as an active part of our conference. It doesn't necessarily need to be a separate strand, but hearing the voice of the students who want to express what's important about their education for them, that really inspires all of us. And it's great to hear awesome keynote presentations. The same thing doesn't inspire everyone. Something that may be really, truly inspiring to me may be ho-hum to someone else, because we all come to it from different perspectives and different experiences. So having that kind of choice is really valuable to me. That's my 2 cents worth.
And I think we fill a hole that other conferences don't. Even though other conferences archive all their sessions, most sessions are an hour, and I don't know how many people go back and sit down for the hour to listen. I also think, I had an English teacher way back when who made us write these very short compositions, maximum content in minimum space. And I think having these 20-minute sessions where people really put everything they can succinctly into that period of time, it's a good bite of professional development, a lot to chew on without a lot of blah, blah, blah. So I think that, yes, like Ted, I love that comparison. So I think we fill a hole.
Okay. On a personal note, I'd like to congratulate Wes on recently achieving his PhD. And another little funny anecdote I just might mention is that I heard many podcasts where you gave a code where you could get your book for just a few dollars, the Playing with Media book. And I always managed to hear those podcasts after the code had expired. And I would go to my computer and log on just in case you'd left it open. But anyway, I did get the book. I haven't read it yet, but it's on my wife bought back a Kindle Fire, and Kindle Fire makes it too easy to get books, and so that was available on Kindle, so I got it. So I'm so glad, yeah. And Playing with Media is a really nice concept, too. Certainly speaks to the Story Chasers, Playing with Media. Those are some really nice metaphors.
Well, thank you, Vance. You mentioned there's so many different folks that you've mentioned in the context of the innovation, you know, that's happening around here, the EdTech Talk community, Paul Allison, Teachers Teaching Teachers. Peggy George, you know, I mean, seriously, there are so many great innovators. It's a phenomenal time to be alive, to have chances to connect and be inspired in the ways that we potentially can. I love the opportunities that we have to learn together. Even if we're not live together, and it's a great thing to be able to do that today, it's great to be able to learn together in multiple ways. So on the note, I'll be glad, after we hang up here, I'll create a free download code, 100% free download code for Webheads, and I will leave it open. I'll leave it open for 2 days. So I've been using this. Sounds like I'm selling drugs. I'm really not. A website called eJunkie. Anyway, so I'll create that as a little thank you for setting this up and sharing that with the Webheads community. And we'll look forward to continuing to follow what you all do, and then hopefully, you know, inviting folks in your community not only to use and learn from K-12, but to contribute ideas, because the international side, we've always had some presentations every year from different countries, from people who sometimes are international teachers from the U.S., but also, you know, from teachers who are living and have always lived in other countries, and that the value of diverse perspectives and, you know, different ideas on education and learning just enriches the opportunities that we have to grow. So I'll be glad to make that download code, and we just appreciate this opportunity you provided for us to get together on a Sunday and talk about this conference that we love.
Well, it's my great pleasure. And so if you'll pass me that code, I will send it out in the message where I announce the recording of this conversation. I think it's been a great conversation. And boy, we've had two astounding ones tonight. This is 4 hours of webinars for Peggy and I. But really appreciate you coming along and talking, like you said, about your conference and just in general about learning from one another, learning together, as it were. I might just mention this is Learning Together. This is what we call our little Sunday event. This is Sunday, November 4th. And we're sitting here with Peggy George, myself, Vance Stevens, and Susan Van Gelder, and Wesley Fryer, and Annette Whitby from Arkansas has just popped in, and John Hibbs from Oregon, and Marteza Baran, who is a tech junkie in Iran, doing some innovative stuff, and despite obvious hurdles. And he actually, I'll tell you, Marteza one time gave a presentation in Rasht, and it was on some topic, but he managed to get me into that presentation. They had denied me a visa to come to Iran, but he managed to get me into Rasht, you know, virtually, and so I could give a presentation at this conference in Iran. So anyhow, that's the kind of people we're dealing with here. But it's great to talk to all of you, and the way this works is I leave the mic open until it goes dead, and then I'll stop the recording, and then when everybody leaves the room, the recording gets made, and we stick it we tweet it, and we announce it, and it goes on to the Learning Together site. We've got learningtogether.postgres.com is our archive site, so you can find the recordings there. So thanks very much. And I'll be going to sleep soon, John. Okay, I will go ahead and stop the chat. Thank you very much. Switch off the recorder. There we go.